This week, we meet Kennedy Bell, the current record holder for the most expensive divorce on our show. So far. This couple started out on top of the world. And for a while at least, they flew even higher and higher. They had it all. But that just makes their fall from grace that much worse. You don't want to miss this one. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Hello and welcome to My Crazy Divorce. I am your host, Tom Milligan, and man, do we have a crazy divorce to talk about today. A lot of people that go through a crazy divorce say they could write a book about their experience. In fact, I am one of those people. I even went as far as to put a chapter outline together. But Kennedy didn't stop with an outline.
I am an author of two books, the first of which is House of Straw, the book on separation and divorce for men only. And my second book is Love with Your Heart and Divorce with Your Brain. It's for both genders, and it emphasizes relationship dynamics during the separation and divorce process for both men and women. And I was married for 15 years, and I'm one of those people that went through the $1 million divorce and looked for resources and honestly couldn't find anything for men written by men. So I decided to write the book.
Yes. He just said $1 million divorce, but we'll get into that later. For now, just know that when Kennedy puts his mind to something, like writing a book, it happens. As I said in the opening, you don't want to miss anything in this story. But first, remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't even play one on TV. I don't practice law or give legal advice. And if it's even possible, I'm even less of a therapist than I am an attorney. What I'm saying is that if you're stuck in a bad situation or a crazy divorce, please seek qualified and licensed professional guidance. As always, if you have a crazy divorce story and you never got around to writing your book, so you'd like to share on our show instead, visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button at the bottom of the page. I would love to hear from you. And besides, being on our show is a lot more fun than writing a book. So let's get right into Kennedy's story.
California in the East Bay, and I was kind of pretty much that all-American kid living in a nuclear family. Mom and dad, my parents were happily married, were a middle-income family. I'm super fortunate. Mom and dad retired down in the Coachella Valley in Indio, and they live on a golf course, and they lived happily ever after, and they're doing fantastic.
That sounds great, right? I have visions of white picket fences. But as the saying goes, you never know what's going on behind closed doors.
My mom and dad were, again, middle class parents. Both of them worked. Both of them were career oriented. My grandmother actually at one point moved in, and my mother found that as a reason to maybe stay late at work. So that led to a bit of conflict between mom and dad. So we had to deal with a little bit of, you know, adult alcoholism in the house, and there were some disagreements, arguments, et cetera, between mom and dad, you know, when we were growing up, and which I think was probably a little bit more than what the norm might be, whatever that is. So, you know, but we were resilient, and, you know, we were still a very strong, nuclear, loving family who, you know, value the holidays and each other. So, but there was definitely that overtone from my mother's side, that, there was, you know, too much to go into, but there was definitely some conflictual points, you know, growing up with mom.
I asked Kennedy how bad the conflict got.
It was definitely the antithesis of conflict, because mom did not want to come home. So because she was in the sales and catering business for a local hotel, it gave a reason to stay later with all the celebrities that would come into town and stay at the hotel. And certainly that led to some overindulgence on her part, sure.
So mom didn't get along with grandma, so she immerses herself in work and starts drinking too much to escape. That's so tragic, but also so common. Kennedy and I talked about the impact that had on his life, but agreed that it's really not the point of this show, so we'll leave it at that. It was about that time that one of Kennedy's natural gifts emerged.
I was very athletic as a kid. I played just about every sport, and I excelled at quite a few. And I'm a little unusual in that I was a little ahead of the curve. At about the age of 12, I started swimming with the college kids at the University of California, Berkeley, and I was one of the top 10 age group swimmers in the country. And so I experienced a fair amount of success and exposure to some world-class personalities and people and mentorship at a very young age.
I'm not really a swimmer. Oh, I can splash my way from one end of the pool to the other, and my cause of death probably won't be drowning. But to be a competitive swimmer like Kennedy, you not only have to have a natural talent, but you have to embrace the fact that you'll be in the pool every day before and after school, that you'll have green hair from the chlorine, and that you have to spend your weekends at swim meets instead of hanging out with your friends. I personally believe competitive swimming requires more time and dedication than almost any other sport. Keep that in mind as the story unfolds. I believe Kennedy's desire to compete and win, instilled in him from birth and enhanced through his dedication to his sport, is the only thing that allowed him to survive the journey you're about to hear. As we've already heard, Kennedy grew up in a nuclear family, and despite some ups and downs, his parents are still together. Sadly, Kennedy's ex-wife, I'm going to call her Bertha for this show, didn't have that upbringing.
My ex grew up in a relatively dysfunctional family whose father left them at very young ages, and so they grew up in a single family house. Dad was completely out of the picture, and more than out of the picture, he was viewed by my ex and the siblings as a sperm donor.
Despite the dysfunction, Bertha was very athletic and allowed to participate and excel in tennis.
She was a happy, healthy, you know, all-American, blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl who just very athletic and excelled in the game of tennis, and she was an excellent tennis player and athlete. So,
when Kennedy started high school, he quit playing other sports so he could focus everything on his swimming, and it really paid off.
I had won a number of high achievement awards, both nationally, locally, and regionally. And recognized for my achievements and performance in the sport of swimming. So my brain as a youngster was really removed from the high school ecosystem at a very young age. My mindset was definitely different. It was super motivated and directed towards being the best athlete that I could be, and I honestly was mentored and coached into believing that I could be the best in the world at my particular event. So that really was what I was focused on.
That focus paid off in the pool, but his dedication to his sport took its toll on the social aspect of high school.
Although I was still socializing with, you know, these acquaintances and friends and my, you know, and this girl who would eventually become my wife later in life was very temporary, and I knew it. It was just, again, mentors always tell me that there was more and that I had a lot to achieve. So it really wasn't something I thought of as kind of an end game. It was just kind of a process, just like my training was to eventually get to an opportunity where I would make the United States swim team and then, you know, make the World University Games or even the Olympic Games or the Olympic team. So everything was a process.
You heard that right. Our boy was shooting for the Olympics. He was that good, and that dedicated. But his hours in the pool didn't stop him from dating altogether. In fact, one girl in particular, we already know her as Bertha, asked him out.
We went on our first date to a Sadie Hawkins dance when she was a sophomore and I was a senior. Sure, yeah. She asked me, you know, hey, what are you doing for Sadie Hawkins? I said, I don't know. She says, you want to go? I said, sure. So, hey, what did I know? You know? So, sure.
Kennedy and Bertha dated mostly as friends for a while until Kennedy accepted a swimming scholarship.
Graduated high school and ended up being recruited by a few hundred Division I, II, and III universities. Ended up going to Florida State University and swimming for the Seminoles.
While Kennedy was swimming in Florida, Bertha graduated from high school and parlayed her tennis skills into a great gig.
Down in Paradise Island to teach tennis. I would come home for the summers and train, and sometimes she would be home as well, and so we would connect, and we'd go running, or we'd play tennis, or cycling, and so, you know, we were friends, and so we would kind of hang out and do stuff together and just have fun together. And then I'd go off back to school.
The way he tells it, I just don't see a lot of romance. Something's got to change, right? Well, just like their first date, sounds like Bertha's going to have to make that first move.
So, fast forward, we were playing tennis doubles together and winning some tournaments and having a lot of fun. And we were having some wine together, and she asked me this question. It was kind of like the pre-close, and I had no idea it was coming. She kind of, you know, asked me, you know, who my ideal, you know, girlfriend would be.
Look out, Kennedy.
It's a trap.
And so I described that, and we said goodbye and high-fived each other, and I was driving home and realized that the person I had just described was her.
Uh-oh.
And so when I got home, I thought, well, you know, I should probably pick up the phone and ask her if she'd be interested in, you know, in just kind of having a relationship, you know.
Nice. Kennedy's finally playing an active role. So he asks if they should have a relationship. And?
So we did.
Oh, that was easy. Not to be outdone? Bertha made the next move.
It wasn't too long after that she, you know, mentioned that maybe it'd be good to move in together or get a place together. And
now it's Kennedy's turn.
So it made sense just to, you know, give this a shot, hang out, and, you know, we, you know, just like any relationship that, you know, when you're good friends, it just grows. And then next thing you know, you're up in the mountains and I'm putting a ring on her finger. So there you go. So that's how that happened.
I don't know about you, but I can't really predict what kind of wedding to expect from these two.
Yeah, Tom, we were two career people who had saved a lot of money together. And we paid for our own epic wedding that, again, was held in the Oakland Hills at a beautiful mansion and, you know, park-like setting with, you know, 250 guests, champagne and wine from Napa Valley flowed like there was no tomorrow. I had friends and relatives flying in from, you know, 15 different states. You know, it was, you know, the horse-drawn carriage, it was idyllic. It was, fantastic. Even today, people mention that it was one of the best weddings that they've ever been to. It was quite a celebration. And so our wedding got off to a bang.
Almost immediately after the wedding, Kennedy and Bertha bought their first home. And not too long after that, welcomed their oldest son, Eric, to the family. 2 years later, Austin was born, and the family was complete.
And so, you know, our trajectory was, you know, very positive. Very loving and very healthy and normal. LA, and everything was great. You know, we had, you know, we skied together, we played tennis together, we did everything. The kids had tennis rackets in their hands at the age of, you know, 2, and, you know, they were learning how to swim at, you know, 8 months. So we were a very active family.
No surprise there, right? It's always sad at this point of the show when we remember that we're here to talk about a crazy divorce. But this is where we learn how this perfect little family falls apart and wastes $1 million in the process. In 2006, after about 16 years of marriage, Kennedy and Bertha went for a walk, something they did almost every day. It was totally normal. But this walk turned out to be anything but normal.
We're in the middle of our walk and she said, "You're a monkey on my back."
Whoa! You're a monkey on my back? That is harsh. And no real warning.
And I thought for a moment that, you know, she's kidding. And so I laughed, kind of a nervous laugh, kind of like, right. And she goes, "No, like, really, you're just, I can't take it. You're just a monkey on my back." And I said, "Really? Like, you're being serious right now?"
Remember, this is 16 years after the wedding people are still talking about. So no matter how good a marriage is, shit happens along the way. So what happened here?
When you see behaviors that are not normal, you think one thing, and then you rationalize, and then you kind of blow it off as just maybe it's, you know, just a phase that you're going through, or maybe you said something you shouldn't have. Maybe she had an interaction with a family member that's really not your fault, but you know, that, you know, she's taking it out on you or whatever that is. So, you know, we were not that great at sharing our feelings, thoughts, and emotions at sub-levels.
Nailed it. Why do we suck at communicating?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that requires a fair amount of self-analysis, right? Where I honestly believe that both myself and her contributed to the demise of the relationship. There's no question.
Well, of course. Marriage is truly the most democratic institution in the world. At this point in our story, the kids are still young, and Bertha is a stay-at-home mom.
Traveling both domestically and internationally for my business.
Nice. That's what's supposed to happen, right?
In all transparency, I think I was overly gregarious with my social circles. I think the perception of flirting was probably there with some of my female coworkers.
Oh, not good, Kennedy. Not good at all.
But I think it was honestly that my trajectory was here, and she was stay at home, and she felt that maybe she, I don't know, you'd have to ask her. I tried to ask, I asked her to go to therapy and let's get some counseling. Let's, you know, talk about where this divide is, and maybe we can close this divide. And she flat out rejected those notions.
Huh. She wouldn't go to therapy. So what to do?
If you want me to fly you to Paris and you need to live there for a year or get it out of your system, I'll do that. Whatever you need to do, you know, but I don't want to go down this road of divorce.
That's quite an offer. But obviously there's a lot more to this story. So where to start?
I really honestly believe that there are two kinds of people. There are many kinds of people, obviously, but there are those who are fearful of failure and those who are fearful of success. And I was fearful of failure, which drove me to succeed. And whereas I believe she was of the personality based on her upbringing and how she was socialized in the familial ecosystem of hers, that she was fearful of success. And so when you're of a personality who is of that genre. Self-sabotage is easy.
Interesting. I obviously don't know Bertha, so I have no idea if he's right or wrong. So I asked him for an example.
When she would play tennis at a high level, by the way, she would play she's a 5.0 USTA tennis player. She always had a problem of closing out her matches, even though she would be up by a set or multiple games. She always had a tough time finishing.
Okay. I guess I can buy that, but what gives him the right?
I majored in psychology, sociology at Florida State. And so human behavior was really something that I was super interested in.
Huh. Well, I'm not qualified, but maybe Kennedy is onto something. This episode of My Crazy Divorce is brought to you by OurDivorce.com. Did you know that in the United States, a divorce is finalized about once every 42 seconds? Since the average divorce pays attorneys more than $11,000, that's more than $8 billion paid to divorce attorneys every year. No wonder attorneys try so hard to convince us that we can't get a divorce without them. OurDivorce.com has made it their mission to provide the most affordable, easy-to-use, and effective self-service divorce process ever imagined. For just $299, OurDivorce.com's proprietary three-step process guides divorcing couples through the entire divorce process and provides the divorcing couple with a complete set of divorce papers, along with easy-to-follow filing instructions for their state. $299 is a great price, but what's really amazing is they don't charge anything to use their service unless it works for you. Will your attorney make that guarantee? Probably not. If you or someone you know is thinking about divorce, visit OurDivorce.com today to get started for free. That's OurDivorce.com and click Get Started. So let's get back to the walk.
We're in the middle of our walk and she said, "You're a monkey on my back."
Yeah, that walk. I know we've gone back and forth on the timeline, but remember, this is 16 years into the marriage. The kids are teenagers.
And keep in mind, I'm the sole breadwinner. And again, I was doing very well. And I had started my own business and also working for a firm. So I was, accelerating financially to the point where, retirement might be realized within, by the age of 50. And she was, playing 5 hours of tennis, a day at the local club and, manicures, pedicures. And we were taking trips to Bermuda and Hawaii and Hilton Head and Bermuda and, all those great trips.
So despite their great lifestyle, Bertha wanted out.
So by the time we got home, which is about a quarter mile walk to the house, we had the very real conversation of divorce and selling the house and splitting the proceeds and sharing custody, and things were relatively civil at that point, because I think I had had it at that point too. I was kind of at the end of my rope having to deal with her significant emotional outbursts and tirades and disassociative behaviors, so I was open to that. So
good for them. Work out a settlement, think about the impact on your boys, and remain friendly. Bravo.
When we returned from the walk, where she had made the notion that I was a monkey on her back, it wasn't long after we were at home and I thought that, okay, well, we've kind of worked things out. It was not within the hour that she grew even more agitated and angry, and she said something that I'll never forget. She said, "I'll take you for everything you're worth, and I'll spend every last dime that you've ever made."
My ex-wife cheated on me twice with two of my friends and coworkers, and as long as I'm alive, I will never understand how a person, no matter what happens to cause it, can go from a normal, outwardly loving and supporting partner to a bitter enemy in just minutes. We'll never know what changed in Bertha's mind during that hour, but I know from experience what Kennedy's thinking.
And of course, that meant a lot to me because nobody gave me a dime. I had worked very hard for every nickel that I had, and to the point where I literally would put holes in my shoes on my first job with Dictaphone, going door to door selling dictation equipment. So, worked very hard for every dollar that I had, and to hear that it scared me. It worried me. It was upsetting.
Damn, that sucks. Without warning and without any real choice in the matter, Kennedy's life was turned upside down. First on the walk, then with the bitterness. And that's when the abuse kicked in.
And then we had also had multiple behaviors, that physical abuse. In front of my children, perpetuated by her on me, hitting, kicking, punching, that required police intervention and child support services. And I was, like a lot of guys, I was prideful. We knew just about everybody in our neighborhood. So to have police with their lights on in front of my house was humiliating.
As a man, I can say that having the police in front of your house for domestic violence would be totally embarrassing, for two reasons. First, no matter what really happened, everyone will assume you hit her. Second, even if you're the victim, it's assumed, as a man, that you must have done something to deserve it. So you become the victim again. But the embarrassment is just the tip of the iceberg.
I see it as a learning process, but it was definitely something that I had to kind of work through. It was very hard because my children were exposed to that. And, you know, I can get over that, you know, my pride and my humility, you know. But for my children to witness that, it was very difficult, which led to multiple incidences of domestic violence restraining orders. Too many to count.
I feel so bad for him. I don't care what he did, she did, or anybody else did. Nobody deserves to be abused, and the kid certainly shouldn't have to be a witness to any of it. But all he could do was call the police and hope for the best. But guess what? I hope you're sitting down, because this may come as a shock, but almost every time the police came, they'd give her the benefit of the doubt.
98% of those were not enforced so much by the police to my benefit, but always in favor of her, despite how amazingly abusive she could be. And I could drill down to, and again, you could read some of those, a number of those incidents in my book. But there's definitely a huge bias when a man applies for a DVRO against his wife versus a wife to, you know, her husband. I was, you know, I'm not a small person. I'm 6'1", 210 pounds. She was 5'7", 135. So, you know, people looked at, you know, you can't defend yourself, you know, you have to be the abuser because you're bigger, taller, stronger, right? You're the man. And so I lived through all of that judgment where, you know, apparently a perfectly physically, you know.
Despite the abuse and pending divorce, there are still bills to pay. So Kennedy has to keep working.
I was in Mumbai, India, and I received a call from my, and this was shortly, you know, this was months after we had talked about our, you know, getting a divorce. And we had agreed that I would just continue to work out of my home office and that we would work towards that goal. So I'm in Mumbai, India, with one of my companies, and I had to go to the top floor of the office building just so I can get cell service. And it was my banker who was notifying me that my wife was taking out a substantial six-figure amount from our bank. And I said, no, that's not okay. And he said, well, she's on the account, so there's not really nothing I can do about it.
And so the games begin. Greedy partners are the lifeblood of the $8 billion divorce industry. Not too long after that very expensive trip to Mumbai, Kennedy was working in his home office.
I was working out of my home office, kind of minding my own business, you know, trying to pay the bills, mortgage, taxes, and insurance, you know, and everything else that you got to do, you know, despite your heartache and your pain, and I'm working through it. And I got a knock on my door, and it was a local sheriff. And I said, how can I help you? And he said, well, I have an order to keep you out of the house, and you have 60 minutes to vacate your premise.
That really sucks.
My whole body went through shock, literally shock. I felt numb. My whole body felt numb. And because I realized that he was serious.
So Kennedy is out over $100,000 and he's homeless. Gee, thanks, Bertha. But she wasn't done. Not even close.
She absconded with over, you know, $100,000 of my kids' college money. She emptied their bank accounts.
Wow, that's low. But think she's done? Think again.
She literally, she got one of my ATM cards that was delivered to my house, secondary house. She actually came and stole my mail, got my ATM card, figured out what my PIN was, and she would take out the maximum amount for 5 days before I even realized that that my card was even issued to me because I had opened up a separate bank account. So, yeah, just insidious behavior that shocking. So for her, it was all about money, 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 money.
I just don't get it. Where do people get the idea that this would be okay?
She was getting advice from her attorney to manipulate a way to get me out of the house and to acquire, take possession of whatever was in the house, whether that be, you know, dollars or checkbooks or art or belongings, personal belongings. And so she was coached. That's really unfortunate. She was also kind of coached by reading a lot of the books that are on the Barnes & Noble bookshelf written by angry, vindictive women for women who are going through separation and divorce and want to believe that conflict is a strategy. And so, I found one of the books when I eventually took possession of the house and she was ordered out by family law, that she had underlined so many of the angry entries into a number of these books that she had left behind, which kind of served to brainwash women about, you know, how to take him for everything he's worth, you know, how to gain custody of your kids, all of those not-so-savory subject matter that women are coached into behaving against their male counterpart.
Okay, I really hope that's not true. But regardless, are you remembering Kennedy's competitive drive to finish strong?
And I think most men in my capacity, which I've also discovered, Tom, in my research, is most men just would have given up. Take the house, take the kids, you know, I'm out of here. But the piece that established my resolve was that I had made a promise to my two boys that they would have a life that would be better than mine, and that I knew under my care that they would both attend a Division I university and be exposed to the opportunities to have choices to accelerate and be better human beings and contribute to the greater good of society.
Kennedy wants a better life for his boys and is willing to fight to make it happen. Poor Bertha's in for the fight of her life.
You know, my first court date was to fight the kick-out order. And then I had multiple follow-ups with regards to my DVRO filings that would remove her from the house. I was, despite the fact that she was proven to be the aggressor and the physical abuser, I was ordered to move out of my house with my two boys into a separate residence, which if I were a woman, I would have been ordered to remain in the house with my two boys, and my husband would have been asked to leave because he was the abuser. So clearly, as a man, there's huge biasness in that.
Boom! Round one goes to Kennedy. Next up, custody of the boys.
I represented myself in a trial, my custody trial, of which I won 100% physical custody of my boys and shared 50% legal custody. I got to cross-examine my ex.
I'm not going to lie. I would love to cross-examine my ex under oath. What a dream. Oh, well. After the custody hearing came 23 more hearings, each with its own experts for both sides to settle the issues around domestic violence, finances, and everything in between. With court fees, attorney's fees, and the cost to hire expert witnesses, every one of those 23 hearings cost at least $5,000.
The reason I fought the way that I fought was not just on principle, but I also knew I was innocent and that I was a good person and that I was a loving father and I wanted to be a father to my two boys. And she did everything she could to accuse me of everything under the sun to try and rip them out of my custody and out of my arms and remove my parental rights. And I didn't think that that was okay. And I objected to that.
And I objected to it. I love how calmly he said that. But his back was against the wall. What choice did he really have? Obviously, Bertha has never read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. In it, General Tzu instructs the reader that once you've surrounded your enemy, that you should, quote, leave an outlet free. Do not press a desperate foe too hard. His logic is that a desperate enemy will do literally anything to save his or her life. So it's best to ease up and at least give them the impression that they can live on. Bertha tried to remove all hope. The result was a desperate and determined enemy.
I would sit there while my attorney would argue. I only had one attorney. But my jaw would be open because false accusations would be made and decisions would be made based on those false allegations. And sometimes my attorney would fight and sometimes she wouldn't. And so that became very frustrating. So Tom, at some point, I actually terminated my relationship with the attorney and represented myself. And I've always said to the people that I engage and help in their divorce process that attorneys don't make money unless they have clients. And those clients will also come and go, whereas those attorneys remain in the system and will remain engaged with both the commissioner and that judge and the opposing counsel. So that takes on a certain priority because you're going to come and go and they're still going to have to deal with these people long after you're gone. So there's a certain amount of gamesmanship that is played within that family law dynamic for both the attorneys and the commissioner. I had commissioner.
He's not wrong. Attorneys, commissioners, judges, and everyone along the way will all be at work the day after your case is resolved. They have to play nice. So anyway, Kennedy fired his attorney. What about Bertha?
I had one attorney, and unfortunately, she had nine. Nine separate attorneys.
Nine? Nine attorneys at once?
Which is indicative of the fact that she would commit to the same behavior, which she would be dishonest, she would lie, she would misrepresent, and the attorneys would end up firing her because the truth would eventually come out. And
oh, That makes more sense. That does speak volumes, though. I mean, seriously, if you are so dishonest that a divorce attorney is offended, am I right? I think this is a good time for Kennedy to remind us that greed isn't Bertha's only flaw.
There was a turning point earlier in the marriage where we were at one of my youngest son's basketball games, and I had had full custody of the boys, and she was upset that the boys didn't want to come visit her. So we were out in the parking lot, and she was in an argument with my older son, and I got in between them to break them up. It wasn't physical. They were just shouting at each other. And I was going to take my two boys home and go have some dinner. Well, she decided that she wanted to haul off and, you know, hit me. And so some innocent bystanders witnessed that and called the police. They apprehended her at the local hospital, where she had checked into ER claiming that I had hit her. Super, super deceptive. Anyway, the police were not buying into that. So they arrested her and she was in jail and her mother bailed her out. But at that point, Child Protective Services and the Family Law Court finally acknowledged the abuse that I was experiencing at the hand of my children's mother.
She's really just not a nice person, is she? But at least the courts are finally catching on. And with that, after 23 court hearings over 7 years costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, Kennedy was faced with a huge decision.
And in order to really be done with the process, I was forced into making a very difficult decision that a lot of men have to make, which is, am I going to be ordered to pay a certain amount of money, you know, for the rest of my life or for a lot of years to somebody who literally was the instigator of the divorce and the abuser and of the relationship, just because she got to stay home and play tennis and go to the salon and take fabulous trips, you know, multiple times a year. Really? I didn't see myself as a lotto ticket.
Alimony can be painful, especially when the recipient is perfectly capable of earning a living. And as Kennedy pointed out, it's even worse when she instigated and perpetuated the 7-year disaster. But no matter what, writing a check every month kind of forces you to remember what she did. I can tell you from experience that that really hurts.
Financially, I was abused, but I was the breadwinner, and I love my kids more than life itself. And so, but I was not ready to make that monthly payment. So, again, I'd always believed that if I could make it once, I will make it again. So, I took advantage of a buyout. No, I bought her out in place of alimony. I gave her all the proceeds from the sale of the house, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it let her keep all of the money that she originally stole. We did an accounting. I let her keep a rental home that we had together, which was worth a few hundred thousand dollars. And we owned that outright, and then some cash and some stock and et cetera. So it was, you know, again, more than $1 million just from the expense to the buyout. And so I had zero obligation to her on a move forward basis from 2013 on.
Sounds like a lot.
Well, I'll sum it up in one simple phrase. It was a $1 million divorce.
$1 million. A million. What a total waste. You could spend $1 million on literally anything else, and it would be better than spending it on divorce. But at least it's over. Well, was it worth the fight?
Proud of my two boys in that my commitment to them was realized, and that my oldest went off to participate in football at a high Division I school, and then eventually transferred to the University of Miami and played linebacker for the Miami Hurricane. Excellent student, graduated on time, and did an internship down in South Florida, and immediately got a corporate job when he got back to back home. And my youngest also took the route of, I knew an excellent coach who was my childhood coach, who was still coaching in the Bay Area at a high level community college, went there for 2 years and then transferred to the University of Miami and became the, captain of the men's swim team for the Rainbow Warriors, and graduated not quite on time. He took a little bit longer route, but eventually graduated, and so he's more kind of a Hawaii time kind of guy, whereas my oldest is, strong sense of urgency and purpose, and so he's doing really well.
I'd say Kennedy won the war, and he told us in the very beginning he's a competitor that finishes strong, and Bertha tends to fold, even when she's ahead.
Have chosen not to interact with their mother. I have always encouraged a relationship with between my boys and their mother, despite the significant amount of dysfunction that she continues to display. She's very latent in her emotional EQ, right? Emotional development. And it's whenever they have an opportunity to engage her, there's a fair amount of dysfunction and that happens. So they've proactively chosen to remove themselves from that engagement, just because of its dysfunction, and that's unfortunate.
Despite the big settlement, Bertha lost everything. Every divorce battle, especially one this long and expensive, produces casualties. Kennedy fought hard and finished strong. But that doesn't mean he went unaffected.
I hate to use the word victim, but I was a victim of, a fair amount of abuse throughout the period of time. And I became not myself for a lot of years. And I was the self-proclaimed president of the He-Man Women Hater Club, for sure. So I didn't trust women. I didn't like women a whole lot. I had a very low self-esteem. What was a very strong, confident, self-assured, strong ego man became less than significantly. And I didn't, because of how I was socialized, I didn't really recognize how hurt I really was. So I was very mistrusting of women for a long time. And this is an important thing that I want men to take away, is that because of my hurt and because of my damage, I sought inappropriate ways to be validated. And so I would date women, and I would have, I would be physically engaged, at a sexual point where I literally was like a robot, and when I share with women, I kind of get it, where you're able to perform and be intimate, but you get almost zero satisfaction from that. And that was highly damaging for a long time. And so I sought approval and validation in all the wrong places, instead of taking care of myself, instead of, after I kind of woke up one day and I literally felt like I was waking up from a hangover. And I said, I'm done dating. I'm just going to focus on being the best father that I can to grow my business and work on my mental wellness. And that was important because tired of being sick and tired. And I knew that understanding and visualizing my greater self was important in order for my health and well-being. And I knew at the time also that I needed, in order to take care of my boys and those around me, I needed to be the best person I could be for myself. And so I reinvested in my mental, spiritual, and physical wellness. When I'd find myself getting a bit in the doldrums, I'd go work out, I'd go for a run. I was still swimming, of course, and I'd put in a lot of yardage.
Healing oneself is a step too many of us skip altogether or just do halfway. I know that I personally didn't take the time to find myself when my wife left 2 years ago, and I'm paying the price for it now. But better late than never. Kennedy believes there's one more step required.
My life, because I had so much more I needed to accomplish, and I owed it to not just myself, but to those around me and my boys, and to anybody else that I was going to have a relationship with.
So after $1 million, 7-year war, Kennedy and Bertha were finally done in 2013. I asked how life has been since then.
I helped to establish men's ministry at a very large church that didn't have a men's ministry. And so I was able to draw men out to be more responsible fathers and husbands and men in general. And I think that passion that I had for myself bled over to those Saturday morning men's groups that I would establish. And I started out with just a few guys. And by the time I kind of handed the group over, we had about 70 to 80 men showing up every Saturday.
80 guys showing up every Saturday to share feelings? I've never heard of such a thing, and I think it's great. I wish I'd had that type of support a couple of years ago. As I always do on this show, I ask Kennedy how he feels about marriage in general. To my surprise, I learned that he's been married for about 2 years now, and along with that marriage came a stepson.
Child who happened to be my son's, best friend in high school, and his name's Bobby, and he is special beyond words as well. He played golf for the Asian Tour. He's really my current wife's son, but he's pretty much my own right now, and I love him.
It's obvious he really loves Bobby as his own. Kennedy spent a fair amount of time sharing how his previous marriage has affected his second marriage, and let's face it, Kennedy's had to deal with some serious issues.
Profound subject matter of trust. And it's something that I've pondered and have thought about for a long time, Tom, because trust starts with self-trust. Do I trust myself with making decisions? Do I trust myself with my emotions? And trusting those emotions to another relationship. And I'm going to be honest and very transparent. I was not prepared because of the magnitude of the damage and the hurt that had impacted me. I was ill prepared to be wholly committed into another relationship that is now my wife. Had to endure a fair amount of unbecoming behaviors that revolved around not trusting myself and not trusting her. And, unfortunately, she was a bit of collateral damage in that regard, but she is an exceptional human being, very evolved, very loving, super forgiving and understanding, and a very high EQ level.
I'm so happy they found each other and that his wife is such a good person. Kennedy offered one last piece of advice, and I'll just say right now that I agree with him 100%.
If you're interested in growing and learning and evolving in this, and you're going through a separation and divorce, I'm one of many divorce coaches out there that are available to engage in. A couple of things I want to encourage everybody that's listening right now is is that there's help out there. And there are people that have been there and have done that, and have gone down this road and have felt the pain and been in the trenches and been taken the shrapnel. And they can offer some significant advice and support in what you're about to go through and or are going through.
Wow. What a story. So much pain, so much money, so many lessons to learn. A huge shout out to Kennedy for sharing his story with us this week. I know it's not always easy to dredge up these old memories. I'm just grateful to learn from his experience. As a reminder, you can buy Kennedy's first book, House of Straw, a book for men on separation and divorce, on Amazon. I've included a link in the show notes. And while his first book was written for men, his next book, Love with Your Heart, Divorce with Your Brain, is coming out very soon and is written for both men and women. I also want to thank OurDivorce.com for making this podcast possible through their generous sponsorship. OurDivorce.com is the most effective, easy-to-use, and comprehensive online divorce solution available. Visit OurDivorce.com for more information or to get started for free today. As always, if you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share on our show, just go to MyCrazyDivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button at the bottom of the page. I'd love to chat. If you liked that story, be sure to let the world know by taking 2 seconds right now to give us 5 stars on whatever app you're using to listen right now. Your ratings are what helps more people find this podcast, so I really appreciate all of you that have already rated us. I'll be back next week with another crazy story on My Crazy Divorce. See y'all next week.
Possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my